Lauren, Lauren. I was thinking, why don't we punt? Come back stronger next week. Debut with Paul Simon.
That's what you've been thinking?
Listen, no one wants this show to succeed more than I do.
Is that so?
I hired you, Lauren. I take it up the ass from this network every day because I believe in this show. And I'm telling you, we should run the dress rehearsal and claw back a win next Saturday. It's in everyone's best interest, mainly yours.
Sorry, was that a threat?
No, what? No. Lauren, all I'm trying to do is give you advice.
25 minutes!
Thanks for the advice, but we can't, Dick. It's a live show.
No one's gonna know the difference.
We just can't.
Lauren, you need to start adjusting your concept of what you can and cannot do.
We can't because there is no tape. I didn't record the dress rehearsal. So we don't have to argue about it.
You didn't what?
We just have to make it to air.
Lauren, I'm not gonna be able to protect you.
I'm used to that.
Oh, screw you. Do you know how much bullshit never makes it to your ears? Because I'm the wall they hit?
Tell that to your Polaroid rep. She's cute.
I'm sorry. You need a sponsor for a show that can't pull a single advertiser. You know they're giving out the ads for free.
NBC is lucky to have something as relevant as this show.
Lauren, they don't even want it.
That's logical, Dick. That's why they're paying us all to be here.
They want you to fail. They're betting on it.
Really?
NBC makes more money playing reruns of The Tonight Show.
So why don't they?
It's a contract dispute, Lauren. I mean, they're trying to prove to Johnny Carson that the reruns are inevitable, so they built a show that was guaranteed to fail. I mean, Lauren, 90 minutes of live television by a group of 20-year-olds who have never made anything. Do you ever stop and wonder why they said yes? A counterculture show starring total unknowns with zero narrative and even less structure. Are you that fucking arrogant that you never even question this? Now look, you want to know what's going to happen at 11:30 tonight, okay? Your actors will be on their marks, bands tuned up, all ready to go. Joe will be hollering out the countdown, and you'll be in the control room. And Dave Tebbutt will be standing probably right next to you. And when those screens go black, he will raise his big ass, jeweled up index finger and say, "Go to Carson." And that will be that. You blew it.
Hello and welcome back to my now annual top 10 movie countdown. We're going to be talking about the films of 2024. It's me, Terry, here with you for the next hour plus, I guess. See how long we go. A bit of housekeeping first. I want to apologize for the delay in getting this out. I planned to have it out a couple of weeks ago, but generally we've just been dealing with a lot of sickness in the house and if you can tell, I'm just getting over something. So, but you know, I've been itching to get behind the mic and talk about 2024 as a movie year in whole. So we're going to do that right now. I'm a bit torn on what I thought of the year, to be honest. I think 2023 was an absolutely amazing year for film, one of the best in recent memory. 2024, for a long period, had underwhelmed me. I don't know if that was probably mostly to do with the strikes and the delay of stuff coming out. There was a stretch in the summer there where it was a barren wasteland, not unlike a movie maybe I'm going to be talking about later on. But it was rough going. And, you know, my least favourite film of the year, Deadpool and Wolverine, turned out to be like the number one movie of the year. So maybe, hey, what do I know, you know? But by the end of the year, there was a lot of strong pickup stuff, and there's a few things I haven't got around to watching yet. The Brutalist is not available on VOD yet, and it's only just come out a week or so ago here in Ireland, so I'm hoping to get that locked down. But the sounds of things, it could have been my number one for this year, but I can't delay forever. I am going to be seeing it, I think, this day next week. In all its 3 hours and 40 minutes in all its glory. God, I'm excited. But generally, there's a lot of entertaining movies this year. A lot of 4 to 4.5 star movies. I don't think I had hit a 5-star movie until maybe September in my own Letterboxd rankings. Whereas by that time last year, I think I'd seen 2 or 3 stone cold masterpieces, in my opinion. But the closer we got to the end of the year and the start of January, the more the 4.5 stars started to roll in, shall we say. there was... I'll put a caveat. These are my 10 favorite movies of the year. By no means, I don't think they're the best movies, if that makes sense. It's not so, some of the stuff that's in here you're not going to look at 25 years from now and be like, that is a major work. Like, there's a film out called Nickel Boys, which is shot mostly from POV of two different characters. And it's a very important work, I think, for kind of what America, what kind of country America is, what kind of country America has always been. And I think it's something that will be looked at as a major work. I thought it was great. It didn't make my top 10, but I'm talking about it now, just because it was a little bit heavy. And I think I enjoyed more movies more. I appreciate that movie a lot, and there was a bit of that across the board this year for me. But then there's some movies that I know I'm going to watch and watch again, if you know what I mean. And there's some movies that I think are a bit prescient, and looking at them now, I'm like, huh. You know, it's very timely. It's make you think about what is happening in the world. And even though it might be to everybody's taste, they kind of struck a chord with me. So that's what I'm going to start with at number 10. This is Alex Garland's Civil War.
What's happening? I guess there's some kind of misunderstanding here.
Yeah?
Yes, sir. Those two guys over there, they're my colleagues.
What kind of colleagues?
Journalists, sir. We're passing through.
Passing through to where?
Charlottesville.
Charlottesville. What's in Charlottesville?
Good hiking, I hear. Actually, we are covering the university campus there. They started a new program. They are reopening the school, which is a real feel-good story.
Uh-huh.
And I guess we all need that, right?
Yeah. This guy's your colleague?
Yes,
this guy here?
Yes, sir. He's my...
That guy?
Sir? Just
what? Just what?
You know what?
What?
Just please?
Just please?
Please?
Sir? Yes, just speak.
We're American journalists.
You told me that already.
Okay, we work for Reuters.
Reuters doesn't sound American.
Okay, it's a news agency.
I know what Reuters is.
Sir, okay, I'm just saying.
Just saying, just what?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you?
Just absolutely terrifying. That was Jesse Plemons in Alex Garland's Civil War. The film also stars his wife Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, and Kaylee Spaney, to name but a few. It is set in a future not too distant away from ourselves, where essentially a Trumpian president, you don't really get too much insight into the president, but he has decided to install himself for a third term. And basically, the country is tearing itself apart. When I saw this film, I thought it was good. I liked it. Full disclosure, I was running a fever. I think I had tonsillitis when I saw it, and I didn't know. All the gunshots in the movie seemed extra loud. And I think they're designed that way anyway. And... don't know, I felt very affected by it. Now, when I went to see it with my wife Faye, she was not as high on it than I was, and I thought maybe it was because I was sick. But I've watched it again since, and it stuck around with me a lot more the second time. It is available on Prime Video right now, and it's an interesting one because essentially the movie is a bunch of journalists, photographers, heading down to DC because they think that the capital is going to be overthrown by the resistance, and you know the government is going to be taken out. So they want to get down and get the story. So it becomes kind of a road movie from start to finish. You know, they stop off in all these different places and you meet these people that are in it for like two scenes and then you leave them. Like that scene I played for you at the top there is, I mean, that's what sold me on the movie when I saw Jesse Plemons in his red sunglasses and his camo gear asking, "What kind of American are you?" It just kind of struck such a chord at me. Considering what you're seeing on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, whatever, all these videos of all the craziness that has been going on, say, previous 4 years, and now the last 3 weeks, it's kind of ramped up again. I'm a big fan of Garland's style. You know, I loved Ex Machina and Annihilation. His previous film, Men, I was not a fan of, to be honest. It was a COVID movie. I don't know, it was very heavy-handed, just kind of pissed me off, to be honest. But Jesse Buckley was in it, who I love, and it just seemed like the movie benefited nobody. It was very weird by the end, and a bit, like, blunt, whereas this, it doesn't really take a side, pro or con, it just kind of presents the stuff to you, and I know a lot of people said that was to the detriment of the film. I kind of like that aspect of it, that you can make up your own mind. It's a great movie that you can watch in increments. You can just flick it on and there's this stretch of the movie, it's this 20 minutes where they stopped off and they're chatting to these two guys who are in a sniper shootout for no reason whatsoever, but that's the point of it. They're like, "Oh, who do you work for?" It's like, "I work for anybody. These guys are trying to shoot me, I'm trying to shoot them." And that's what the country is devolved into. I don't know what more to say about it. It's just one of the ones that stuck with me. And quite frankly, there's a lot of scenes in it that have been rattling around in my head since I saw it back in April of last year, I want to say. It's a brisk watch as well, a little under 2 hours. And some really good performances. And again, it's very stylish. It's entertaining for me and also thought-provoking and unsettling. You know me, that's what I look for on a Saturday night out. Speaking of unsettling, this is kind of continuing a trend. The next movie I picked is all about white nationalism. Yay!
Okay, copy. That's our window.
They should be coming out now.
All bomb squad units. Bomb squad units, you are to respond ASAP. 1409 3rd Street, Embassy Theater. There's no report yet of numbers.
We're rooted.
Copy that. Thank
They're
you.
Not there. It's a distraction.
Negative.
There's a man in the line with a machine.
machine gun. If you move before the police get here, he will shoot your head off.
There they are.
Shit. Last one.
You cover me.
If there's one thing you guys know about me is I love a good bank robbing movie, and that's exactly what The Order is. It's directed by Justin Kurzel, starring Jude Law and Nicholas Hoult as the main leads, and it's based on a true story of a splinter group from the Aryan Nation that basically robbed a bunch of banks up in Seattle and Oregon to fund their building of an army that they plan to, you know, attack various state houses across the US. It's a true story. And again, it is very timely, I think, for what is happening in the world today. People are just, they seem to not care about hiding their hatred anymore. There's a lot of that in this, because basically the charter of the order is they're just all regular people that have regular jobs and all hang around together, but they practice this, you know, level of hate and they're almost deemed too extreme for the, you know, the church, quote unquote, that they're in. You know, even the church that they're in won't go after certain things, or they won't take it to the extremes, but these guys are willing to push it because they want to bring a war. The reason why this struck a chord at me, I just thought it was a really, really well-made movie. Propulsive. Action is really good. Like, if this had come out last year, I might have put it on the heist mini season that we're doing over on the old Patreon. You can join us over there. We're doing our heist mini season for the low, low fee of €5 a month. That's how impressed I was with the set pieces here. It's something. Even from that clip there, the score that they're using, straight away you know it's like the ticking of a clock or something like that. That, oh shit's going down, it's happening. Jude Law is suitably haggard in this movie. You know, I think back to 1999, The Talented Mr. Ripley, and he was one of the most beautiful men alive. And you see him now, he's still, you gotta love him for this. He's hanging on to that hairline, and he doesn't give a fuck. You know, which benefits him in this, because he has a kind of droopy mustache. He's his character is kind of somebody who has been obsessed with, you know, taking down what we say like groups or cartels or whatever, and is sent up to Seattle to kind of cool off. But while he's there, he can't let things lie. He starts investigating all this stuff that's happening, and he basically puts together the pieces of, oh, there's this organization here, and he starts tracking them, and it's his goal to take them down. You know, all the best movies of this caliber will be compared to Heat. It's not quite that in terms of, you know, Jude Law versus Nicholas Hoult, and Hoult is very good as the leader, Bob, of the Order. He had a really strong 2024. He had this movie, he had Juror Number 2, and he had Nosferatu, all like in December, which is crazy. And three really strong movies, and the other two were pushing at the door to make my top 10, to be honest. I'm really impressed with how he, you know, what kind of actor he has, you know, become, I guess. Not that he, you know, needs my approval, but in this, he's very believable as somebody who is kind of almost a blank slate at time, and then somebody who is like so driven to get this stuff done. It's unnerving the way he looks in this. You know, he has a scene where he meets Jude Law intentionally. He goes and shows himself to him, and he just has this kind of like whiteness is not the word, but he is dressed in a white t-shirt, but it's just this pale slate, this blank slate, and it's very unnerving. We know, because we've seen him in his other actions, that what is behind there. But when you see him and Law face to face, you're like, oh, he's just showing him nothing, but he's unnerving him with that nothingness. So just goes to show you, like, it could be anybody, you know, that these supremacists or the extremists, whatever you want to call them, could be living right next door to you. And ultimately, you know, there's a character played by Ty Sheridan, who is the younger person that goes under the wing of Jude Law. And if you watch any of these films, you kind of know how that's going to end up, or it's, you know, similar things that happen in it. But it's, you know, just because you think you know where it's going doesn't make it any less effective. And it's just been a while since they've done a good cops and robbers movie, and that's exactly what this is. And I miss it. That's the thing. I fucking miss these movies. I know there's a reason why I put it on the draft, because I love these kind of movies, but we haven't had one in quite a while, and this is a strong effort. It's on Amazon Prime as well at the moment. I think you can, if you got it there, check it out. It's like 2 hours. I think I watched it on New Year's Eve and then stuck on the Hootenanny afterwards. Talk about a fun night. But yeah, give this one a watch. It's slick movie making. Justin Kurzel is a very talented director. He did the Macbeth movie with Michael Fassbender, which I was a huge fan of. Visually, his stuff looks really good. Makes the everyday stuff look slick. That's the best way I would put it. So we're going to move on to something a little more lighthearted and relaxing. This is an animated feature called Flow. That's probably going to be the hardest clip that I've put in there, because this movie has no dialogue. Yes, that is Flow. It's directed by a Latvian filmmaker. Now, I want to make sure I'm not butchering his name. Gints Zilbalodis. Probably got that wrong. But this movie is about essentially a cat in a world that could be in the future, could be in the past, you don't know. But a flood comes, and essentially the cat, you know, that scene I played there is him on the top of a rock trying to get onto a boat because the water is rising too much. And the movie is the cat gets onto a boat, and along the way in the boat there is a capybara. He becomes friends with a dog, a monkey, and I believe it's a heron. And they're all on a boat together, and they're floating to try and survive and get to safety. And it is beautiful, and it is relaxing, and it is mesmerizing. And it just made me feel really good. I'm actually kind of welling up now talking about it, but it just made me feel really good. It's if you're a cat man like me, this will play hard for you. But it kind of strikes the chord of like Homeward Bound, except without the, you know, crummy voiceovers. Respectfully, sorry, Michael J. Fox. But just the idea of animals that can come together and work together is phenomenal to me. It's something that I'm like, oh, how did we I mean, we have. We've told it a million times before, but it's always with smart alecky voices and quips as opposed to just, no, this is a cat. And the cat is acting normally and it's interacting with a dog. And at times they're at each other and at times they're, the dog will bring them over, you know, something from the play with or whatever like that. Or there's, you know, a bird is trying to attack the cat and our friend the bird steps in and stands up for him and stuff like that. Just all animal behavior. And I'm not really doing it justice, to be honest, because it's a very visual movie. The animation is very different. It kind of looks like Screensaver, and I mean that as a compliment. It's like no other animated feature you're going to see. It won a Golden Globe for Best Animated Feature. I hope it wins the Oscar, even though, you know, it, all that means nothing, but, you know, I much preferred it to all the other frontrunners I'd seen. Inside Out 2, Wild Robot was okay. I would expect it more, but this really knocked my socks off. It had me thinking and it had me, you know, contemplating life, I guess, but also just like from a story perspective of like, oh yeah, you can just, you don't need to hold somebody's hand. It's like, these are the things that are happening. I've set up the pieces on the board, watch them play out. And there's some truly like transcendent pieces in it where it looks phenomenal. The music is great. There's a bit with a whale that, you know, is just absolutely beautiful. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's only at my number eight even. So it kind of speaks to how there are stronger movies there ahead of me. It's like 80 something minutes long as well. I sat down and watched it with the kids. It held their attention for most of the movie anyway. My little guy is 2 and quite hyperactive, but a good hour he sat and watched it. So, you know, any parents out there that are looking to enjoy some art with your little ones, I would highly recommend this. Okay, let's get into my number 7, changing gears ever so slightly.
I too crave nothing but revenge. A big belly full of revenge. If I may, if the shooter goes around the back, the shootee won't know the precise moment of the execution. Minor torture, but every little bit counts. Either way, that rat shot will turn my brain into a pink mist so fast I won't even hear the sound of the gun.
I'll hear it. I'll hear it for the rest of my days.
Of course you will.
I'll feel the kickback in my hand.
Sure.
I'll remember your face as the slug worms its way into the soft matter of your brain, taking with it what you call your reason and your memory, from which my mother will fortunately be absent.
Brilliant. I'll be dead and you'll still be sorrowing your lovey-dovey and your mummy magnificent. You idiot. You can never balance the scales of their suffering.
Give them back.
I can do it again. If you can't do me quick, you'll have to do me slow. But you are never going to get anything close to what you want.
The bloody brilliant Chris Hemsworth there as Lord Dementus in George Miller's prequel to Mad Max Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. I have to say, I'm not a huge fan of the title. Just call it Furiosa. It doesn't have to have the Mad Max saga in it. We all know what we're going to see it for, because generally all of us loved Mad Max Fury Road. It's bloody amazing. And this film is not the same. It is longer. It is less propulsive. It is set over, you know, a longer time. It basically, you know, charts the life of a young Furiosa and how she made her way through the Citadel and all these different men that she has come in contact with her life in Morton Joe. For those of you who aren't familiar, the villain from Mad Max Fury Road is here. You know, there's the guys from the Bullet Farm and Gastown and Lord Dementus himself. I will say Hemsworth is excellent in it. But this movie is... it is a saga. It is a saga. It's about 2.5 to 2 hours 45, I think, around that time. I didn't feel bored ever watching it, but I was like, oh, I'm in for another, you know, balls to the wall, pedal to the metal, foot down, non-stop, like Fury Road. It's not that, but it gets to those places in time. You know, there's still breathtaking action. It's a lot more talky, you know. Okay, Anya Taylor-Joy, who plays the young Furiosa, she doesn't have a lot of lines, but Hemsworth is pontificating like nobody's business. He's actually incredible in it. I'm really glad to see he had it in him, you know, because I like him as Thor quite a bit, in the Marvel movies. You know, he's in a movie called Bad Times at El Royale, where he kind of gets to play this cult leader, and you see his charisma on stage, but they let him go hog wild in this, and it's so funny to see. You know, Furiosa, we knew, was a tough character from Fury Road, but in this, it kind of shows how she became who she was. But Anya Taylor-Joy has such a, like, expressive face. It's not expressive eyes, I think, is a better way of putting it. That she, you know, even with a glare or a glance, she, you know, conveys toughness, pain, sometimes hurt as well. There's a romance in there with the guy who taught her how to drive the war rig, Praetorian Jack. This movie, it might not be for everyone. I just think it's probably the last movie George Miller is going to get to make on this scale, because it didn't do so well at the box office. And you know what? Shame on us. Shame on everybody who didn't go see this movie. Whereas Drek, like fucking Deadpool, makes $1 billion. And I don't know. It's made like 100 million domestic, I think. And in my opinion, it is far, far superior. You're seeing stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else this year. It's a very unique film. It's weird, and George Miller movies are weird. You know, Babe is a weird movie, or, well, Babe 2, Pig in the City. He didn't direct Babe, but Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2 are weird movies. He directed those movies, and he also directed all the Mad Max movies. And to see something so unique as this out there, I just couldn't help but, like, I had a huge smile on my face when you're just seeing this big fucking tanker running down a tarmac road in the middle of the fucking desert, and then all of a sudden people on fucking, you know, fans, and they're kind of half helicopter, are trying to attack it and blow it up and shit, and you have an action sequence that goes on for 30 minutes, and like, hell yeah, what's not to like, you know? Give me some more of that. He apparently had another movie planned in the, you know, the Mad Max Furiosa world or whatever, but because the performance was not so good, it's been shelved, which is a real shame. This one is on, it's on Sky or Now TV, if you have either of those bundles there. It's something, stick it on your screen, turn the fucking volume up, grab a bunch of popcorn and just enjoy. Okay, why don't we get into my number 6, which is going to be a pretty big player at the Oscars this year, I think.
Спасибо тебе за таблетки.
I want what he had. I want one of those. Did you fucking hear me? I said I want one of those.
No.
No? What the fuck, why?
Because I don't deal drugs.
A fucking gopnik who can afford to live in Brightwater and doesn't deal drugs? Yeah, right.
It's my grandmother's apartment and it's her drugs.
Okay.
I don't have any more, and I'm not Gopnik.
You're right. A fatty-ass bitch is what you are.
Hey, guys, have you seen this guy today?
Что такое фатty-ass bitch?
Ёбаный пидор.
Yep, what he said.
Вон отсюда.
Чё ты грубишь? Я тебе вопрос задаю.
And why am I flagitous bitch?
I don't know. They say you're just born that way.
Coming in at number 6, that is Anora, directed by Sean Baker and starring Mikey Madison. This movie is the tale of a stripper, Annie, who basically meets the son of a Russian oligarch, and they have a bit of a whirlwind romance. He is paying her for her services, whether, you know, her time, her companionship, and then they end up getting married, and she thinks she has hit the jackpot and it's going to be a fairy tale life for her. And then when his parents get wind of this, they kind of go on a bit of an adventure because the son goes missing, and they have to try and find him because they want to get the marriage and all. And all this stuff happens from there, and it becomes a bit of a farce in a very, very good way. This film is very funny. Mikey Madison is foul mouth. All the characters, they're kind of bumbling, they're tripping over themselves, but they're hilarious. They're real people, which is, you know, a theme in Sean Baker's work. But it's also heartbreaking, and it's also sad, and it's a great commentary on America and how everybody's trapped, and, you know, the game is rigged. She thinks, oh, I found my way out. There's a great scene early on where she is in the club and she's hustling, you know, to get dances with these prospective clients, and she's dialed up to the nines, and then it's whatever, 6 o'clock in the morning, and she's getting the train home, and you see her in a beanie and an oversized coat and hoodie, and she had no makeup on her face, and she's almost unrecognizable. So she thinks she has this way out, and it's the push-pull of, like, is this going to be snatched away from her? What does she deserve? Or, you know, can she have a better life for herself? You know, there's a lot of classism at play here. It's really incredible. Having it at number 6, it seems funny because it's probably going to win Best Picture. She's probably going to win Best Actress, or maybe, you know, it would be in contention for maybe Best Screenplay. I think it'll be one that will only go up in my estimation the more I watch it. It's a breeze. It's fun. If you haven't seen it, I'd highly recommend it. She's incredible. Mikey Madison is incredible. And it's, you know, it's going to be somebody, it's a major, like, marker put down. She was in Scream, she's in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but this is like a next level performance. Sean Baker has been making these low budget movies that are kind of been on the fringes. His movies have been nominated for Oscars before. I think this is his most mainstream movie by far, and I think it'll kind of catapult him into this next stratosphere of directors. And deservedly so. I think, like I say, I've nothing but praise for this movie. If you haven't seen it, I don't know anybody that's seen it that hasn't enjoyed it. That's the main thing for it there. And the ending is particularly brilliant and devastating, and also hopeful. I don't know. Just go watch it. It's a fucking good movie. Okay, speaking of good movies, and don't know if they're devastating, but horrifying? That's going to be my next one.
I mean, that's just the way it is.
You know what I mean?
People are just people. And I have to give people what they want. That's what keeps the shareholders happy. And people always ask for something new. Renewal, it's inevitable. And at 50, well, it stops.
What stops?
What?
What stops?
You know, oh, George! Oh! I'm sorry, I gotta run.
Harvey!
George! Those ratings are insane! You're a genius!
The most disgusting scene in a film that has quite a few of them. That is The Substance here at my number 5. It stars the wonderful Demi Moore, who's probably never been better. Another young starlet from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Margaret Qualley, as I guess they're two halves of the same whole. This movie has a lot of rules in it, and I'll get into that in a second. But I'd be remiss if I didn't just mention in that clip there, that was Dennis Quaid eating a bunch of prawns, and it comes very early on in the movie, and it kind of sets the template of how this film is going to gross you out. You can hear it in that clip, this pure sound of him eating the prawns. It actually doesn't do it justice. You see him dipping it in the sauce and putting them in his mouth. It is stomach turning, but that is what director Coralie Faggia wants to do. She wants to make you uncomfortable. She wants to make you squirm. And boy, does this movie do that. It's body horror, you know, as it comes to barreling down towards the end of it. But in between that, it is a very potent satire or take on, you know, getting older in Hollywood, how the media views somebody like Demi Moore. I cannot overstate how incredible she looks in this, and yet they talk about her as if she is, you know, an old horse that has to be put out to pasture, which is fucking crazy. The premise of the movie is that Demi Moore hosts an exercise show. She looks like she's going to be replaced. Somebody tells her about this thing you can get, the substance, this elusive place. And essentially, if you take the substance for a week, then your original self, your 50-year-old self or whatever, it becomes a husk. And out of that husk comes a younger you. And then the younger you walks around for a week, and then you have to switch back. And they do a very fascinating thing where it's like it becomes a duel between the older and younger selves, and they keep having to remind her it's not somebody else, this is you. So if it's like, oh, she's doing this or she's doing that, it's like there is no she, there is only you. And it kind of speaks to the lengths that one will go to make themselves feel beautiful or stay current or whatever you want, whatever way you want to look at it. Like that, I mean, I talked about Mikey Madison, who could possibly be winning the Oscar. Demi Moore, she won the Golden Globe. She could be the front runner for, you know, best actress as well, which would be incredible, because I never in my wildest dreams, when I was watching this movie, and like it's over 2 hours long, but there's parts of this movie where you're thinking about it thoughtfully and say, geez, that's awful. Or what, you know, what a shitty world we live in. And then there's parts of this movie where you are hooting and hollering and no, oh, you're squirming and don't do that, don't look at the screen. It's a blast. It is so fun. This one is available to watch on Mubi if you have a subscription there. I think they're doing, this is a free plug for them, a euro a month for 3 months. And they took the distribution of Universal, I believe, and it's been one of their biggest movies ever released. And I'm really glad to see something like this. I'm giving out about Furiosa not succeeding, not making 100 million, but then a movie like this, I think it made almost as much as Furiosa, budgets are obviously a different thing, but it is heartening to see. And there's a lot more going on. Like, people who come to watch it for the body horror and the gross out aspect, you'll have a good time, but there's a lot more going on, a lot more going on under the hood, and I think that's what makes great art. This next movie I'm going to talk about after this, I wouldn't call it great art, but boy did I have a good time watching it.
This is a dramatization of the true story of the final known killings, the most prolific and unique American serial killer of the 21st century.
You know you asked for this, right?
Just trying to have a good time.
I'm in control.
Don't say it out loud.
Gotcha.
I want something intimate, something romantic.
That was the trailer for Strange Darling, directed by J.T. Molnar. The tagline for the movie is a story told in 6 chapters, and that to me is a really, I don't know, it's a clever thing. It's a refreshing thing that happens in it. So we start off in chapter 3, and literally the start of the movie is a young woman running through a field being chased by what looks to be a sort of, I don't want to say redneck, but he has, you know, a black and red flannel on. He has a pickup truck. He is chasing her down the side of a country road with a shotgun, and he's trying to, looks like he's, you know, he's trying to murder her. The woman in question basically is trying to escape from him for this first chapter, and then it jumps to chapter 5 and things are a little bit different, and then it jumps back to chapter 2 and it's also different, and so on and so forth. And as you get to see more of the chapters unfold, the story starts to shift and it starts to change, and your perception of what you thought you were watching is not what it was, and so on and so forth. And when I was watching it, immediately I was struck with, like, oh, it's like Pulp Fiction, you know, it's something that we haven't seen in 30 years. We're jumping around in time, but it's much more of a compressed story. Like, Pulp Fiction is sprawling, you know, you're sure it's set over the course of a couple of days and you're jumping in and out in the lives of these different people. This seems to be set over the course of a day, maybe 2. And it's focusing on, you know, the 2 main characters. And I don't want to give too much away on this one because I enjoyed it so much. Would I call it a horror? More of a thriller horror. But it just had me, like, much like The Substance, I was cackling, I was enraptured with it. I was like, oh, that's really clever, I really like how they did that. It's violent, it's bloody, it's chilling at times. The reason I actually played the trailer as opposed to a clip is the dialogue clips in this movie will, I don't want to say give the game away, but they reveal a lot, whereas a lot of the other clips are kind of chase sequences. And if you're in the humor for, you know, a lean, mean, kind of frightening time, I would highly recommend this. Kyle Gallner of, like, he was in Scream 5 and he was in the Smile movies. He's really become like a 21st century, whatever the equivalent of Scream Queen for males is. He's really, really good in it. And I don't, I don't know how you're going to see this. I've got it. It's on video on demand, so it's out there if you're looking for it. But I was so surprised and so happy about this. You know, 9 times out of 10, you go up to somebody on the street and ask them about this. They're not going to know what you're talking about. But that's what I'm here for, to tell you about these things. So it's been a good year for horror. And quite frankly, this has probably been my favorite one. So I hope you enjoy if you check it out. Okay, we're hitting the big three. Let's get into it.
That is 3001. USD. Our bid for the concession stand at the Steinhardt pool.
In singles? Oh, it's a bit unorthodox, but the council will consider all bids, proposed or otherwise. Correct, Mr. Mayor?
Aye.
And the Bravos?
Looks like a check for $300.
Well, boys, you got yourself a snack shack.
My number three film of the year is Snack Shack. It's a movie that sounds like a fake movie, to be honest, something out of Seinfeld that they would all go and see on a Thursday night. But this is a heartwarming tale of two young friends who, I think they start off, they're trying to make and sell their own beer to make money for the summer. And then they find out that, oh, the snack shack at the pool is apparently a good way to, you know, make some bank. And then they decide to, that scene there, they decide to put down their bid for it and, you know, work over the summer to try and make money. And, you know, over the course of it, there's a bit of summer romance thrown in there. You know, friends come apart, or, you know, it's a very formulaic movie, but it made me, this is just to my speaking, I was so happy watching this movie because they don't make movies like this anymore. It has my guy Gabriel LaBelle in it. Buy your stock, folks, I'm telling you now. You know, you heard him at the top of the show portraying Lorne Michaels. Talk about range. He's portraying 31-year-old Lorne Michaels in Saturday Night. And in this movie, he's playing, I think he's 14, a young lad in it. And it's just a fun, charming, coming-of-age story that the Hollywood seems to have forgotten how to do. And I had such a blast watching it. There's a scene where, you know, they're supposed to be going to a poker game to try and, you know, win money so that they can buy supplies or whatever like that. And I remember they smoke weed for the first time, and it's a great cut between somebody smoking weed, and then it's like all of a sudden he's at the table with the cards in his hand, and it's the big showdown hand. And it's done tremendously well. It's tremendously enjoyable. The performances all around are great. The two friends, two amazing. They capture what it's like to be 14, 15, even though they're trying to be older a lot of the time. They're trying to be entrepreneurs. They're trying to, you know, pick up older chicks, stuff like that. And every now and again, they just get smacked down to earth with like, oh no, you're still a kid. You have to go mow the lawn. You know, you're never going to get with the older girl next door, etc. And I don't know, it just hit me. I remember thinking when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is the first movie I felt I would give 5 stars on Letterboxd. And this was probably in August, that's what I'm talking about, where it was like, I'd seen other movies and I thought they were really good, but this was the first one that I was like, oh, this is amazing. This is exactly what I've been missing in movies the last little while. And for that reason, I have it at my number three. It was my number one for a long time this year, but it's got slightly edged out by two movies that are going to come up. That one and two, two and one, you could swap either one out. It was a tough call for them, but let's get into talking about them right now.
You're facing a full invasion, Fremen.
How can you be so sure the great houses are here for me? They may be curious to hear my side of the story, don't you think? I am Paul Atreides, son of Leto Atreides, Duke of Arrakis. Gurney.
My lord.
Send a warning to all ships. If the Great Houses attack, our atomics will obliterate all spice fields.
You're out of your mind.
He's bluffing.
Consider what you're about to do, Paul Atreides.
Silence!
Abomination.
Message sent, my lord.
As a servant of the Imperium, you will bow at my feet.
Your feet?! You'll be lucky to keep your head. I'll take the hand of your daughter. She will remain safe, and we will rule together over the Empire. But you... you have to answer for my father.
Do you know why? I killed him because he was a man who believed in the rules of the heart. But the heart is not meant to rule. In other words, your father was a weak man.
Stand. Or choose your champion.
I'm here, Atreides. I need a blade. Except mine.
That was Lisa Nelgaib himself, big Timmy C. Timothy Chalamet, as Paul Atreides in Denis Villeneuve's sci-fi, I'm going to say it, masterpiece, Dune 2. What can I say about this movie? It is fucking incredible. I had held off watching it for quite a time because I'd missed it in the cinema. I missed the first one in the cinema, and then I figured I would probably be lost if I went to see the second one. I was trying to catch both of them on the big screen. Ended up watching both of them on the TV around Christmas time. Even still, it's fucking incredible. It looks amazing, sounds amazing, the design is amazing. The acting from Timothée Chalamet, Christopher Walken, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Zendaya, who am I thinking? Javier Bardem, Stellan Skarsgård, yes. Austin Butler, Dave Bautista, and many, many more. Everybody's just fucking on fire in this movie. I'm not even going to go into the plot, because if you haven't seen the first one, you need to watch it to have an idea of what's going on. But the spectacle of everything that happens, it drops you right in the action at the start. And it's Paul and his mother, Lady Jessica, and they're fighting off some oppressive soldiers. And they do something in it that, you know, you're 5 minutes into the movie maybe. It had me levitating watching it almost. And it's funny because it's like soldiers with jetpacks, but there's no sound coming out of the jetpacks, so they're just like floating against this beautiful red background. And I was just like, okay, I'm in. This is next level compared to the first one. And the first one is a very good movie. It looks like it's going to be kind of shut out at the Oscars. It might win a bunch of below the line awards. I think sound would be a must, and probably visual effects, stuff like that, because it's top. This is big budget blockbuster filmmaking, how you do it. It's long, it's 2.5 hours, but I never felt bored. They're making a third movie. I wish that they were making it next year. I think they say its release date is maybe December 2026, roughly. So it's funny, it kind of finishes on a downer note, but yet I can't wait to see what happens. I've heard the book Dune Messiah that it's based on is pretty not fun reading. So it'll be interesting to see what Villeneuve can do with it. But he's got my trust. He is an expert filmmaker. And I was so delighted with this film. It could have been my number one. It's really that good. It's a damn shame that Villeneuve is not up for Best Director at the Oscars. I mean, Oscars are a load of bollocks. I keep saying it, but it still annoys me. I don't know how I'm going to square that circle, to be honest. Timothée Chalamet is up for Best Actor for Bob Dylan. I mean, he is so good in this. There's certain points in the movie where he takes it from, you know, the scene before he is speaking softly enough, and then the next scene he is puffing out his chest and he is shouting and, you know, controlling the room, and you're like, oh, who's this guy? Where'd he come from? But you also believe it straight away. Great fight scenes, great action scenes. It's on Now TV or Sky, whichever, if you have a subscription to it there. If you haven't seen it, run, don't walk, is my advice, because I was blown away by it. It's incredible. And speaking of incredible, my number one is coming right up.
Fuck it, I'll do it.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Because I want you to actually do it, so I need to know that you understand why.
I'm not married to you, Tashi. Just be happy I'm doing what you want and shut up about it.
You are such a fucking child.
Of course I am. I've spent my entire life hitting a ball with a racket.
Why the fuck am I in your car?
Because you're stupid.
You're stupid.
I know. I'm just not as disturbed by it as you are. I don't have nearly that high an opinion of myself.
You're the most egotistical person I have ever met in my life.
But I've never been confused about the fact that I'm a piece of shit. That's what you like about me.
I don't like anything about you.
You like precisely one thing about me, and it's that I'm such a piece of shit that I can actually see you for what you are.
And what is that?
In reality, really, really insanely hot woman.
Oh, fuck off.
I guess now you'd say I'm MILF.
Pull over.
Come on, don't be
Pull the
mad.
Fucking car over, Patrick.
Fine.
Pull
don't
over.
Be. Fine.
Number one movie of the year is Challengers. Fuck, this movie is, I love it. I think it is so good. Not to bring it back to the Oscars again, it getting zero nominations, particularly for score. I mean, you just heard that clip there. Jesus Christ, it is propulsive, it is heart pounding, and that's one of like five or six pieces of amazing music by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, who are really the best in the biz these days at making an impressive film score. My hairs are standing up after just listening to that again. Anyway, the film is something that we don't really get anymore, which is a medium-sized budget adult drama about relationships and how fucked up they can be, starring actual movie stars, you know, starring Zendaya, who is, you know, a huge celebrity in her own right, which, you know, I don't really know how that happened. I mean, My first exposure to her was in the Spider-Man movies and being like, oh, she has one name? Who is this person? But apparently she's a huge Disney Channel pop star TV show. But since then, it's just she has this aura about her, and she certainly showcased it in this movie. The story is, you know, Zendaya is in the middle of this love triangle between two best friends. Art Donovan, played by Mike Feist, who is incredible in this movie. He was really, really good in Steven Spielberg's West Side Story a couple of years ago, but in this movie, I think he's so good, and equally as good, playing kind of a completely different character, but showing off, as the kids would say, the Riz, is Josh O'Connor playing Patrick Zweig. And the screenplay, I also think, probably should have been nominated. The screenplay is impressively clever. It starts off literally in the middle of a set of tennis. These two guys are playing against each other. And then it jumps back to like a month earlier. And you see some more of what's going on in this life. Where two of the characters are, where Zendaya and Mike Feist are in their lives. And then it does a further time jump back to when, you know, Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist were younger playing tennis. So it doesn't hold your hand too much. It does tell you, oh, you know, 10 years earlier, 1 month earlier, whatever. But you have to be engaged and you have to try and keep up with the movie. And it keeps kind of going back to this final set of tennis that they're engaging in, and how the pendulum swing of power is, you know, is happening within that, and it's also happening within the earlier parts of their lives. It's very, very interesting. They do an incredible job of making Zendaya at once look like a 17-year-old tennis prodigy dancing to Nelly's Hot in Here, to also you're believing that she is a, you know, 32-year-old business mogul with a young daughter, and is, you know, managing her husband's career. Both things are true, which is a great trick that the movie could pull. Josh O'Connor plays the kind of roguish, scuzzy tennis player who at one point can't afford to rent a motel room and is contemplating letting a gay couple take him in as their boarder for the night in said motel room. And yet when you flash back to him younger, he is this immense talent that has untapped potential, and just showing how he got from A to B is very interesting. The direction by Luca Guadagnino is at times incredible. There is a scene where he takes you inside the tennis ball and you are kind of zipping back and forth. It's just so, so good. I really liked it the first time I watched it. I watched it with Faye the second time. I liked it a bit more. And then the third time I watched it, I was like, yeah, it's a 5-star for me. I think I'd rated it 4.5 at the start. I don't know why I was holding back, to be honest. It's the best film I've seen this year. It's one I think I will rewatch all the time. It's on Amazon Prime now, if you have the subscription. I think it's 2 hours, 5 minutes, something like that. Like Friday night viewing, Saturday night viewing, whatever. It is so, so good. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's a movie that like made me excited for adults, non-action movies, if you know what I mean. Like the dialogue is the action in this movie, and we don't get too many of them anymore. So I had such a good time in it. And you know what else? It's sexy without showing any sex scenes, which is another great magic trick the movie pulls. Just very, very impressive. Go watch it if you haven't seen it already. I can't recommend it any higher. Okay, we'll do some near misses, or, you know, alternate picks, and then I'll wrap things up.
Let me in now, and it can be nice. Make me go now, and I have to.
to come back. Not once, not twice, but as many times as I like.
That's the main man himself there, Nicolas Cage in Osgood Perkins' Long Legs, a movie that I enjoyed quite a bit. Kind of goes off the rails a little bit, but it's a solid serial killer thriller with a hint of occultness in there. It's on Prime Video. I think I gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd. I would recommend you go for it. Didn't crack the top 10, but it's a very decent watch, and it has me excited for what Osgood Perkins is going to do next. Sticking in that vein, I watched another kind of noir body horror thriller called Love Lies Bleeding. It's also on Amazon Prime, starring Katie O'Brien and Kristen Stewart and my man Ed Harris. It's about a kind of drifter girl. I think it's in the 80s, set like it's in Nevada, I guess, and there's desert town. That's not a lot going on. She is a bodybuilder and starts a relationship with the owner of this gym, who runs it for her estranged father, who is Ed Harris, who kind of runs a militia, and, you know, some crimey, capery stuff happens there. There's some cool body horror stuff. Katie O'Brien is incredible. She, like, she's super fit. Her body looks bonkers. She is going to be in the new Mission Impossible movie. Obviously TC saw something special in her, and she looks like she's going to be a star, and this movie really kind of lets you know that straight away. And Kristen Stewart is Kristen Stewart, who's always amazing. Another one I saw called I Saw the TV Glow, which is the second film from trans director Jane Schoenbrum. The movie is about I guess fixation on TV shows and getting too attached to them, but it's also like a trans coming of age story, and it's a very sad movie, but also like very affecting. It has some incredible moments in it. One of the best last 5 minutes in a film I've seen this year. Justice Smith is the main character in it, who, he's played a lot of sidekicks and stuff in the likes of Jurassic World, Dominion. He was the main star of Detective Pikachu. He's really impressive in this movie. He plays a kind of pained, lost young boy that doesn't really know what's happening in his life and finds it hard to relate to a lot of things. But he really is, he plays it very well restrained. I'd recommend it just because you're not going to see anything else like it, and it's definitely worth watching, I think. Anyway, what else do I have here? I talked about Rebel Ridge before. That's just sitting there on Netflix. Go watch it. It's incredible. Aaron Pierre is going to be a star. I talked about Hitman before as well, which is, you know, Glenn Powell just charming up the screen. It's a great time. Rebel Ridge is about 2 hours 20, which is probably a smidge too long. I think Hitman is like 2 hours on the button. I'm sure you all have a Netflix subscription. Check them out. They're really good. What else? Oh, Conclave. Yes, Conclave, which is up for Best Picture. Ralph Fiennes is up for Best Actor. It just won the BAFTA for Best Picture, which was kind of surprising, but then the BAFTAs always do their own thing. It could be the one that just is the last one left standing for Best Picture. I don't think so, but I really enjoyed this movie. About 45 minutes into it, I was like, is this going to be my favourite film of the year? And then it kind of stagnates a little bit, but it's all about the Pope is dead and how do we elect a new Pope. It's the Papal Conclave. And the best way I could describe it, it's like a murder mystery without the murder. It's like an Agatha Christie, Then There Were None. But instead of people being murdered, it's people being told, you can't be the Pope. So it's really good. I mentioned Juror Number 2. I mentioned Nosferatu. Definitely, like, go seek them out if you haven't seen them. Wallace and Gromit, Vengeance Most Foul, sitting on Netflix. I had a delightful time watching this. I'm very grommet pilled anyway. So it's just sitting there. You cannot go wrong, especially if you've got young kids. My both loved it. And Gus is only two when it wrapped his attention. So that's always a seal of approval. Heretic, good. You know, Hugh Grant is excellent in it. The film about 2/3 of the way through, I thought was excellent. The last third really, not dropped off a cliff, but as Katma would say, it's a ka-chunk down for me. And I'm trying to think, is there... and I talked about The First Omen. Really, really good. It's sitting there. That's on Disney Plus as well, if you like kind of scary stuff. It's actually a pretty decent year for horror with Late Night with the Devil as well coming out. I recommend both of those two. But yeah, that's kind of my year in review there. We're going, what are we like? Oh, we're just an hour 20 almost. So I'm going to wrap it up. I will plug the Patreon one more time as well. If you're listening to this and you want to hear more movie talk over there, myself and Andy do our, you know, we cover our mini-series. We're in the midst of just finishing off our heist movie mini-series. Last one on the docket is 1995's Heat, a classic by Michael Mann. I cannot wait to tuck into that. But on the series beforehand, we've done Ocean's 11. We did Hell or High Water. We just did Out of Sight and a bunch more other great ones. The Town. We've done a Tony Scott miniseries before that. We've done What's So Great About the MCU? What's So Great About 90s Action Movies? What's So Great About Ryan Gosling? And What's So Great About Big Willie Slops, aka Will Smith's Bad Movies? And a bunch of other one-off top five style episodes there. That's all available to you for the low, low fee of €5 a month. Come on over. It's a lovely community there. We're very thankful for everybody who supports the pod and hope you will join us over there. We have a good time. But that's going to put a button on it here for me. Thanks for listening. I hope you got some nice recommendations out of this or just enjoyed hearing me blather on about movies, the topic I love to blather on about. Until next week, I will talk to you then. Be good, everybody, and stay safe. Goodbye.
El jefe está con el cliente. Están esperando.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. According to our flight plan, we'll arrive.
Hello, very nice to meet you. I'd like to know about sex change operations.
I see. Men to woman, or woman to men.
Man to woman.
From penis to vagina. Is it for you?
For me?
No. What would you like to know about it, madam?
I want to know it all. What is the protocol, the techniques and the risks? How many operations? How much time do you need?
Mammoplasty.
Yes.
Vaginoplasty.
Yes.
Rhinoplasty.
Yes.
Laryngoplasty.
Yes.
Mammoplasty.
Yes.
Vaginoplasty.
Yes.
Rhinoplasty.
Yes.
Laryngoplasty.
Yes.
Control laryngoplasty.
What is that?
Adam's apple reduction.
Yes, 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 yes.
Vaginoplasty.
Yes.
Empenoplasty.
Yes. Yes.
Laryngoplasty.
Yes.
Just for the bath. How much will it be?
For you? $4,500.